Hello, and welcome to the Soft Shoulder Podcast. This is a podcast about creativity, self-love, growing through your breakups, and marrying yourself. My name is Danette Relic. I am a coach. I am an author. I am an artist. I am fantasizing about a new wardrobe. I am cooking more often than I ever have before. I contain multitudes, as do you. There's always more to discover about yourself and therefore more to love. Special thanks to the magical assistance of tech witch Allison Tarr and the music of Lee Rosefair. The Soft Shoulder is brought to you by my book, Crash Bloom, a creative guide for growing through your breakup, available wherever you enjoy buying books. And dear listener, if you are looking for a breakup book right about now, kind of makes sense. I think this is a window of time. There's different waves, and I think the waves hit in different generations too, depending on your season of life. But I know this space, like post-Christmas New Year, before Valentine's Day, there's this gap here that seems to be a popular time to reassess, have the conversation, do the breaking up. I may have mentioned this before, but I thought it was really interesting when I worked in a flower shop that the most funeral arrangements we did was also during this month of January. And there was something about like people hanging on through the holidays. And I think that was just fascinating just to see in numbers, right? Like it was a very glaring data point, let's say, a way to predict what you needed to order in advance, which is kind of wild. And I think it's interesting too, when you think about breakups, you think about all of the pressures of events and outings and socializing and family things that are happening around the holidays, how it just might be a terrible time to have that conversation, or you want to put it off or avoid it. Give yourself a little bit of breathing room. I'm not saying it's the right decision. I'm saying that I think that's what drives a lot of that. Or the holidays kind of magnify what maybe wasn't clear before, where things are like kind of questionable, and then the intensity of that season can give someone an answer that maybe this is time for this relationship to change and possibly to end. So if you are in that boat, you're not definitely not alone in that boat. And I hope that my book Crash Bloom can help. If you don't want to order from big booksellers online, and you have a small bookshop near you, you can always just ask for it. Ask for Crash Bloom by Danette Relic and, it can get to you. I'm really, grateful to hear that Crash Bloom is helping people. And I'm going to share with you how it's helping someone who left a 5-star review called My Messy Heart Needed This, just this past November. I never thought I would need a breakup book again, but life had other plans for me. This book came at the perfect time. It's helped me navigate the storms of heartbreak, and now I can see the shoreline. I have lots of healing left to do, but this book has helped me realize that hearts do heal. And my heart is especially grateful for Danette. I miss her IG posts, but I will hold this book close to my broken, open, and messy heart. I mean, thank you so much to the person who wrote that review. I am so glad to know that Crash Bloom has helped and that you are seeing the shore. It's so easy to forget that, right? When we're in the storm, when we're in the messy part, it feels like shores don't exist. But they do. And sometimes we need a little help reaching it and lead a little company along the way and a little reminders of the things that we already know. Because it's very likely this isn't your absolute first time, right, going through a breakup if you're going through one now. And so you've survived other heartbreaks in the past, right? You know that there was a shore. You know there's a part of you, I think, there's a part of all of us that knows that there's always another shore. But, oh man, getting to it and getting through it can be such a lonely thing. You don't have to go through it by yourself. So thank you so much for sharing that. It means a lot to me, and I think it helps people know if this book maybe might be a good companion for them as well. Somebody used the phrase with me recently, someone else who is experiencing a breakup, "I am ready to crash bloom." And I pause there because I'm thinking crash bloom as a verb. I am ready to crash bloom as a thing that one does, which I guess could take place where, like, I'm ready to break up, I'm ready to move on. There's lots of other things we could say at this type of transition. You will have words that describe your own experience, of course. But I wondered about this. It made me happy to hear, obviously, and I thought, wow, what does it mean? I'm ready to crash bloom. You know, when you name something different, and I want to be careful here because I don't, you know, this kind of takes me into this territory. I love language, as you probably know if you've been a listener for a while. I get really nerdy about it, not very precise about it. I'm a little whimsical and poetic and maybe artistic, you know, in how I play with language. But I also am interested in, like, the history of words and how words impact us in different ways. And I also, I'm not into gaslighting ourselves, tricking ourselves, sugarcoating things. I'm very much into the truth. I'm very much into integrity, the whole of a story, the bittersweetness, all of the things that are included here, right? So it's a big yes and, this conversation for me, that I enjoy splashing around in. But it's like, let's take, you know, a reading nook. I have a feeling those of you listening might find that word pleasurable. Like, ooh, this place has a reading nook. Let's go see the reading nook. Let's look at photos of reading nooks. And we can picture what we might see there, right? It's cozy. It's sensual. It's a little small. You feel kind of like cradled in there. There's books, or like a perfect place to curl up with a book, usually maybe in a window, not necessarily. Like, it's a special place. We can also call those types of places bench shelves, or, you know, like cramped, like a cramped futon. Like, I don't know. Like, you can describe it in another way, right? It's not the same feeling at all. It's not inviting, right? So if we're describing a breakup or like a hard time or a heartbreak or like, it's all, you know, I'm in the abyss. There might be truth to that, and the truth telling is important. But when I read the phrase, "I'm ready to crash bloom," I was like, oh, I wonder what that would be like to be on the precipice of a change such as this. And to state that phrase, "I am ready to crash bloom," where the bloom is a part of it, right? It's like, and the crash, right? So it's not saying it's all going to be like happy rainbows immediately. The crash part is in there. But when you're saying it, "I'm ready to do this," it's like, you know, wrapping your arms around the entirety of the experience and the word bloom at the end as this flourish. It's kind of like when, you know, reading that review for the book where it's like, now I know there's a shoreline, right? It's like building the shoreline in to the language that we use around breakups. Anyways, I just wanted to reflect on that and invite you into that if that's something that you're experiencing. I think that being mindful of our language is one of my love languages with myself. It's like words, not just words of affirmation, but being mindful about the language that I use, the words that I choose, how often I repeat them. This is definitely a way that I beat myself up. This is definitely a way that I am very hard on myself and not very kind. So it's a love language because it requires that I pay attention to this, and I intercept this, and I interrupt this, and I find new words that are true and that are kind, right? This isn't about saying, "I feel amazing" when you feel like garbage, or, you know, if you are also have been a listener for a while, you know, I'm also grieving the loss of my dad this year, which has been horrible. and beautiful, but it's been very painful, you know, to not count that part of it, to be like, well, like, he's always with me and I feel great about it. I feel just nothing but gratitude. It's like, of course I'm grateful for him. But you know, both things need to be acknowledged. My body is going to bristle if I try too hard to sugarcoat the language around this, right? That's why there needs to be the truth. And I think, you know, when I wrote the book and chose the title for the book, it's important to me. I love the bittersweet. I love the truth, which has the shadow and the light and everything in between, not always the binary. This whole spectrum, this full spectrum living. You know, as I've found materials, reflections, books about grief, one thing that keeps being said is that grief, how much you're grieving is like a reflection of how much you loved. And if you don't love, you don't really grieve. Something along that. That might be oversimplifying, but I've heard something to that extent from many different voices. And so, you know, this is the cost of admission, right? If we want to love so beautifully and strongly ourselves and other people, if we want to fill our hearts with love this way and be vulnerable and put ourselves out there and experience the kind of incredible things that are available to us when we're willing to be in the arena, you know, when we're willing to go to bat for love and like really put ourselves out there. Of course there's a risk. Of course there's a risk that it's not going to be perfectly safe and we're never going to feel pain. Even if everything works out in your fantasy of like a long marriage and you never break up and you never fight and everything's perfect, which probably isn't possible. But like, even if at some point, unless you both die in your sleep at the exact same time, someone's heart will be shattered at the loss, you know? And like, if you live your life avoiding that pain, then like think of all the things that you miss out on, you know? So if you're going through a heartbreak now, and I know that they are complicated because sometimes there's good reasons for them. Sometimes you've initiated them. And even when you've initiated them, it doesn't mean that it's not painful and it doesn't mean that there's not a loss. Because we remember what we hoped this might be, what, you know, what glimmers of chemistry and beauty brought you and this person together in the first place. And there's lots of layers here and there's lots of nuance here. But speaking of coming together and chemistry and the early days of love, allow me to gently segue into our relationships with ourselves and how a self-marriage can begin. If you've heard me talk about this before, and you've, or just heard of the concept of it, and it just seems too daunting, it seems too big. I'm really working on this. I've been working on this for a while, where I feel like I've done a disservice in some ways, and I didn't realize I was doing it, but it was like, marriage is such a big deal. And if you haven't felt like you've been in a relationship with yourself of any kind of kindness or intimacy or, you know, like you're just so out of touch for lots of good reasons. But like marriage is a leap, right? Because it's almost like if you're going on a dating app and you get a proposal, right? It's too much, right? It has to start somewhere else. It has to start with a spark, right? Can't start a fire without a spark. And so what does that look like? And how do you recognize when you are having that spark with yourself? And a spark doesn't just, like a spark needs a little help, right? That's what courtship is. That's what dating is. That's what flirting is, right? There's like a little spark, but then you need to like fan the flame. You need to let it grow, let it breathe, let it move, see what the potential is here. Not every spark, you know, some sparks fizzle. They're just like a fun little spark. But, you know, these are things that we can be creating. And if you think that you're supposed to be madly in love with yourself, perfectly in love with yourself, that you have solid self-trust, which, you know, good for you if you're confident in that. But I know so many of us, including myself, who have been married to herself for multiple decades now, you know, that trust is an ongoing thing. There's a lot of things that can break it. There's a lot of things that might need healing and repair. It's not an overnight situation. So if you have this idea that you need to be there to marry yourself, to say you love yourself, that it needs to be like there's some kind of imagined finish line, then you're never going to recognize that maybe right now there's a spark like floating around you. Maybe a whole bunch of them have been here for years and you just haven't noticed them enough to give them that importance, to give them that attention, to be like, oh, these little sparks, these little flashing tingles that I get, these little ideas that I brushed off so quickly, they're like magic seeds of light, like floating around that could be and want to be so much bigger, so much more. They want to grow. They want to be a part of your life. They want a relationship with you. They want to see you in relationship with yourself in a way that's so deeply fulfilling. And time is an ingredient in things that are wonderful and lasting. I'm sure there's exceptions. Most of the time is an ingredient that you just can't swap out. I've probably, you know, said that, I know I've said this before, and I've probably mentioned sauce. I am Italian, and so, you know, there's the whole sauce-making situation, right? My nonna made sauce. My mom made sauce. A lot of my relatives make it. They make it, and it's not something that happens in 5 minutes. Doesn't mean you can't make a nice pasta dish in 5 minutes, but I'm talking, like, the sauce, right? That, like, needs to be on all day. That is a longer process. That's the slow simmer of things, enriching the flavor, right? Soups are like this, you know, lots of things. Plants are like this. Human beings are like this. Do you remember when you were four? I mean, I'm sure you were great, but also it took a lot of time for you to learn all the things that you've learned since you were four. It took a long time. And it feels like forever, but like it had to. It had to take exactly the time that it took for you to get from there to here. So, you know, as I'm developing the next invitation, the next offering of the Art of Self-Marriage, it will be out this year. It'll be out soon. It's working with me closely. It's working with me one-on-one through the process that I went through when I married myself, except you will have the benefit of support and somebody who's experienced, a self-marriage mentor and muse alongside of you to help you take this seriously. You know, I feel very fortunate, and I built things into my engagement back in my 20s when I did this, because I knew that I would want to wiggle out of this. I knew I'd want to bail. And maybe that's a surprise to you at this point, since I just talk about self-love all the time and I'm like, I've been married for years. But when I first did it, I knew that there was a part of me that wanted it and a part of me that was like, this is so stupid. What am I doing? This is embarrassing. I could just not bother. You know, like, what am I even doing? I know that most of us have that voice in us. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of talk about self-love more than ever, certainly more than when I proposed to myself. But at the same time, there's a lot of criticism about it. There's a lot of equating it with narcissism and navel gazing, which is not what this is. And so there's a lot of voices, right? I mean, I didn't have a computer and I had a rotary phone with no double line. Like, there was literally like a lot less voices coming in and interrupting this idea. And even still back then, you know, my inner voice was strong. All the conditioning I'd picked up along the way was still there of like, this isn't, why are you bothering? And so like, I feel like part of my purpose here is to be a counter voice to that one that I heard, to tell you why you should bother. All of my work points in this direction of like, this is important. I know that this is important. I know that making that decision, the decision to get engaged to myself, the decision to get married to myself, and then all of the other decisions around finding out why this was important to me, crafting vows that meant something specifically to me that aren't for anyone else. There's a lot of decisions. My decision-making muscle really started there. I mean, I was kind of reacting and just spontaneously responding to my environment, I think, up until that point when it came to love and relationships. Just, you know, what we see in the culture, what I was expected to do, what I thought I was expected to do and say, what I thought I was expected to want, what I thought would make me happy because I was told that's what should make me happy. Like, me deciding to marry myself wasn't about deciding to be alone. It was about taking that attention back. It was about asking, is this what I really want? Is this what really makes me happy? What does love really mean to me? If I was loving myself first, prioritizing this relationship, and then dating, how would that change how I dated? I will tell you, it radically changed how I dated. And still does to this day. Like, absolutely. It's hard to even imagine. Like, it's so hard to imagine how I might be in romantic relationships with other people and all the relationships, but speaking specifically about dating, if I hadn't married myself, I just can't even imagine what kind of a mess I'd be in right now, because it's such a strong and wonderful compass. It has built self-trust. It has helped me build self-trust over all of these years, so that when I'm still navigating things that are unclear, because, you know, I'm a human being living life, meeting new human beings, right? This isn't static. So there's new things to discover. There's new things to kind of wobble on. There's new experiences that are going to require a different kind of self-trust or a different, you know, kind of courage that maybe I haven't applied in the past, right? So it's always in relationship, always moving and dancing. And the more I do it, the more I trust that I can build trust. It's really been quite extraordinary. So pausing here and going all the way back to those little sparks of light, the kinds of little, like, when you see someone like across the room, you see someone in a classroom, you see someone at the grocery store, you know, a bar, wherever, and you catch that eye, you look at them, you see them in a certain light, and it's like, oh, who's that? I want a closer look. At first, you might get a closer look, and then you might be like, oh, no, I'm not attracted to that person. But there's something that struck you, right? There's something where you're like, oh, who's getting a coffee right now? That person looks interesting. And you go for the second look. It starts as simply as that. It's that interest. It's the curiosity. And then it's like, huh, there's something I like here. What else is there to like here? Like, oh, this person's got like great hair. what else is great about this person? Like, oh, this person's laughing and chatting up the barista. Like, I love this person. Like, this is so cool. This person just gave a big tip. I appreciate that. And then you notice the sweater this person's wearing, and it's like you either recognize it or you love the color. And then you notice the color of the person's eyes. And then you notice the person's laughing again, and you see the smile in their face. And you maybe notice that this person seems confident or this person seems relaxed. And then maybe you even see a moment of self-consciousness where this person's kind of feels like embarrassed and kind of reels it in. And there's something charming about that too. It just starts with a situation like this. It gets your interest. So in your life right now, I just want you to think about yourself in this way. Like, what sparks your interest in you? Now, I know this is a big ask, because like seeing a cutie at a coffee shop, that's an easy thing to do. And you've been living with you for a very long time. And if you're like me, you've sometimes been quite cruel to the person that you are in your thoughts and in your words. And so I just want you to entertain the idea of, if not that you're interested in you, If not, that you look in the mirror and you could actually be like, who's that person? If that might be too much. So maybe the spark is with self-marriage itself, just the idea of it. Maybe those little sparks are, someone else did that. Many other people actually have done that. I've heard songs about this. I've thought about this. I've heard jokes about this. But there's something that's catching my imagination. There's something that's stirring things up here. What is that? What do you imagine when you imagine the possibilities of self-marriage? What are you curious about? You don't have to do anything about it yet. This is just the glance across the room. But this is where it starts. It starts with a spark of like, what if this actually is way better than you think it is? What if all the criticisms and the doubt you have, like, get blown out of the water? Right? Because in some scenarios, let's go back to that imaginary cutie at the coffee shop. At some moment in time, someone had that experience and that ended up being their person. They ended up meeting that person, maybe not even that day, but they ended up getting together with that person and they remember that first time they saw them at the coffee shop or in the classroom or at the workplace, whatever. And that ended up being the love of their life. And if they had listened to their self-nagging voices, being like, oh my God, this is such a cliche. This person's probably a bonehead. Like, just drink your coffee. They're probably taken. You don't know. You can't walk up to this person. Who do you think you are? Like, all this garbage noise that your brain is doing, right? If you listen to that, you might miss out on something so incredible, where then this becomes the story and this becomes the memory of like, I remember the first time I saw you. Not everyone has these kinds of stories, but some people do. A lot of people do. And what's funny is that sometimes it's people see someone and it's like, I'm going to marry that person. I've heard this story and it's amazing. I have not had that where you see that love at first sight feeling. And sometimes it's like, I thought this person was really irritating. and in hindsight, that memory changes. Or maybe this person was like a friend. You just didn't see in that light at all until something shifted, right? So this spark has different qualities to it. It doesn't have to be like any other love story you've heard. It's just about interest. It's about the potential for something, the potential for fire, the potential for light, for a glow, for something to expand, to become warm, luminescent, sparkling, right? It starts just with that glimmer. So I invite you to play with that. If not for yourself, if you can, that's great. Then just about the idea of loving oneself. What are other people enjoying that you could be enjoying, right? If you really embraced it, what if you did what I did? How would your life be different? You might be able to find out. So, dear listener, no matter what state your heart is in, no matter what season of life you're in, you are someone worth loving right now. It all starts with you. It all sparks with you. Take good care of yourself. Thank you so much for being here and listening. Share with someone who you think might enjoy these podcasts, if someone's coming to mind. And just take good care of yourself in this wild world that we're living in. Remember that love is an incredible power and you have so much of it. In fact, you are it, I think. Take care.